Hello and welcome to the Paper Player Podcast, where we cover all things pertaining to paper magic. I'm your host, Tony, and I'm joined with my two co-hosts, Jeff and Josh. JB will not be joining us this week because he's a working man. Hello, how was FNM for you guys?
Something going on Friday. I didn't get to FNM, but I did have a random Modern Horizons D2 draft that I did yesterday, and I did fairly poorly, but I did get some cards I needed, so it was a win, and it was only like $11, so really a great time.
$11 draft? Where was this?
Yeah, for real.
Mitch.
Ah, got it.
It was $11?
Uh-huh. Where did you get them? Yeah, no kidding. Where do you get those packs from?
The winner got Retro Foil Scalding Tart.
Whoa.
Because it was Rare Redraft.
Friday, I didn't get to play Modern. I don't have all the cards I need. You know, Ragavan being like $80 now and stuff. I ended up playing Legacy. I went 2-1. I definitely saw a bunch of Urza Saga and Legacy. I beat it twice and lost to it once, but it's hard for Burn to really beat Sword Doctor combo. I did draft on Tuesday. The pool we had was kind of crazy. There was a Ragavan open. There was like three Evoke creatures open. There was a bunch of Urza Saga. It was a really crazy box. I wish I would have just bought the box instead of drafting it. But it was a lot of fun. Went 3-0 with Crab Tribal. So it was fun.
Yeah, with my FNMs, I've been playing my Monkey Moon Blade deck. In the last 3 days, I guess I went 13-4. The deck is strong, but it just needs a lot of work still with the sideboard just because the modern metagame is so strange. So 9 matches in person and the other matches on MTGO, which I will be talking about a little bit later, kind of the disaster that client is now. But
which is why we play paper.
Right. But I can't get enough reps in paper just because there's not the volume of events I want to play.
Right.
Agreed.
So
are your 4 losses, I was going to ask real quick, are your 4 losses to Blue-Red Delver?
No, I'm actually 50-50 against that matchup.
Okay, that's good.
So far. And I've only played it. I played it 4 times and lost twice and won 2 other times. The Lurrus versions of that deck, I've completely dominated. The Stormbreath Dragon and the Murktide Dragon versions, they completely hose me. I don't know how to beat those 2 cards.
Stormbreath Dragon?
What's not Stormbreath, Stormwing Entity.
Okay, yeah, I'm a fan of that card.
Yeah, those cards are really difficult for me to deal with in the current list that I'm rocking.
I play that card in Legacy. I was thinking about playing that card in my build with Gutshots, and now that you're saying people are playing it even without the Gutshots, that's like uplifting for me to hear.
All right, so the topics I want to kind of cover today are going to be the spoilers and then just the overall MTGO market and I think what it's having or what its impact is on us as paper players and also digital players as well. Right off the bat, I just want to go right into the dungeon mechanic that's going to be coming out with the new, I think, core set, which is the D&D set. And it's called the Forgotten Realms, and these dungeons are a very new design space, and I know Wizards of the Coast has announced that they're only going to be coming out with 3 of these dungeons, so I don't think there's going to be any coming in the future, or they might say that now, but you know how Wizards of the Coast is, where later on we will see it come out later. So with these 3 dungeons, Jeff, do you want to kind of go over what these things are?
I apologize in advance if I butcher any words. Dungeons of the Mad Mage. The first room you enter is Yawning Portal. You gain 1 life. And then the next room is dungeon level. It's a scry one. And then it splits. Left side is going to be Goblin Bazaar. Create a treasure token. And then it goes down to Lost level, which scries 2. And then you go to the left again. Runestone Caverns. Exile the top 2 cards of your library. You may play them. And then it goes into Deep Mines, which scries 3. And then the last room is Mad Wizard's Lair. Draw 3 cards and reveal them. You may cast one of them without paying its mana cost. And the other rooms we missed on the right was Twisted Caverns, which is target creature can't attack until your next turn. Moral's Graveyard, create 2/1/1 black skeleton creature tokens.
You should add that it'd be very handy to have the visual up while.
For sure. If anybody's listening to this, please have those visual up so you can kind of make sense of this. Just describing the card is very difficult. How these things work is they exist in the command zone, I believe, or a zone outside the game.
So they're tokens? they exist like emblems. Like, they're just outside. They can't be interacted with.
Correct. And they have levels to them as well. So you always have to start on level one, or when you venture into a dungeon, the first level. And then once you're in a dungeon, you can't just keep going to other dungeons. You have to complete, you have to venture through that dungeon. And once it's completed, you can do the same dungeon again or make a choice to go to a different one.
So the next one is called Tomb of Annihilation. First entry is Trapped Entry. Each player loses one life. And then if you go to the right, we have Obelette. Discard a card and sack an artifact and a creature and a land. And then it hits Cradle of the Death God. Create a troll pool, a legendary 4/4 black god horror creature token with Death Touch. And then if you were to go to the left instead, it's Bowls of Fear. Each player loses two life unless they discard a card. And then Sandfall Cell. Each player loses two life unless they sack an artifact, a creature, or a land. And then our last one is Lost Mind of the Phandelver. Cave Entrance, scry one. And if you go to the right, Mind Tunnels, create a treasure token. And then this one has it's real weird. Again, visuals would really help with this, but there's three rooms and it connects to the left and the right. So the farthest right one is going to be Fungi Caverns. Target creature gets -4/-0 until your next turn. Then Temple of the Dumothan, draw a card. And the other three rooms we missed would be on the left and the middle. And that's Goblin Lair, create a 1/1 goblin creature token. Store room, put a 1/1 counter on target creature. And then Dark Pool, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life.
So that's a big mouthful. There's a ton of text on these cards. Especially from an emblematic standpoint, since emblems tend to be kind of simple. Josh, what do you think of these for Modern and Legacy?
I think it's way too hard to judge them yet on Modern and Legacy. I don't think... I mean, inherently, like, it's in your interest to have, you know, a resource like this that, you know, is infinite as your deck allows it to be. Like, you just have more options and, like, something always to do. But whether or not it's competitive in Modern Legacy, that remains to be seen. I definitely think in Standard, with the stuff we've seen so far, it seems pushed enough to make its presence in Standard, especially after Eldraine rotates.
Jeff, what do you think about these three, I guess?
So, one thing, first of all, I think this is, like, I've heard this before, but I think this is a color pie break, because now this allows for, like, colors to basically choose. Like, you could be more aggro by selecting the ones that create tokens. You can be more controlling by the one, like, making people discard and sacrifice things. I could see it showing up in Modern. We need to see more of the set and more of the venture mechanic to make sure it will happen, but I think it's plausible. There's
parasitic mechanic.
Oh, yeah, Nidar, for sure. Selfless Paladin, one of the cards, like, seems perfectly fine for, like, a Modern, like, white weenie deck. And there's tons of things that, like, seem like they can rush you through a dungeon. Like, the fastest you can go through a dungeon is 3 venture triggers. Granted, it makes you discard and sack a lot of things, but then the next is 4, and that's still pretty fast. And there's a lot of things that benefit from you going through a dungeon extremely fast, and I think we might see something come up. This is also if Modern Horizons 2 doesn't just overshadow this.
It's going to, unfortunately.
I agree.
I think the comparison to, like, energy is very fair.
Where it's, like, all self-contained into one set. Yeah, that's kind of how the adventures felt also in Throne of Eldraine, where they had cards like Lucky Clover, which only referred to adventuring cards. Or is that what they did? Their adventures? And the same with, like, the energy mechanic, where it was very self-contained. So there's not really a lot of play outside of the cards, except inside this set. So if there's a deck here, it's only going to be contained in this deck. Whereas when you look at, like, a mechanic like Magecraft, that works with all instant sorceries and or copies. So, like, Magecraft has synergies with Storm because it copies. It has synergies with other just instant sorceries in general. So it kind of makes that mechanic live longer or beyond its set. Is there any cards that you guys want to specifically talk about? I've just seen a whole bunch of them. The thematic or the themes of this set, incredibly flavorful. So if you love D&D, this is the set for you, especially because I think they just have added keyword mechanics, which I don't believe are going to stay, but like keyword mechanics to everything, which is describing an action. Like, I don't know if you want to pull up one of the cards.
The Eliwick.
So her plus is she ventures, her minus You look at the top six, you can put a creature into your hand, and if it's a legendary, I think you gain 3 life. And then the final is you make an emblem or creatures you control get +2/+2 and trample for each dungeon you've completed.
Is it each unique dungeon or each dungeon you completed?
It's for each different named dungeon you've completed. So the best it can be is +6/+6.
And haste and trample, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and she comes in with 4, she costs 4.
I definitely think this like card it looks worse than it probably will be.
This reminds me of a lot of the Zendikar Nissa from the original Zendikar.
The 5-drop one.
No. The one from actual Zendikar, the first time Zendikar came out, where it was like, go get a Nissa's Chosen.
Yeah, she was a 5-drop.
Oh, no, it was green too, I believe. It might have been a 5-drop.
Maybe it was a 4-drop, but I know what you mean with the Nissa's Chosen, like grabbing something specific.
Yeah, whereas like this only works with dungeons, and obviously if dungeons are free to play, one of the upsides to them is they don't cost anything to be in your sideboard, so it doesn't take any slots away. But if you are going to be playing adventures, so the standard players that are going to be playing outside of arena are going to have to carry 3 of these things, and I can guarantee you, because of the size of the card, it's going to be a nightmare to use a small like pin to kind of mark, or a small tracker, and if you actually knock that over and then trying to be like, well, I did this last turn, or I was actually on this side of the dungeon, and so on. So that could be a little bit problematic from like a physical play.
That was my number one complaint with it right off the bat, was that the tracking seems like it'll be an issue.
Yeah, I guess you could like keep the tracking like through a notepad, be like, okay, you've adventured X time, so I would have like an adventure and just go like --, rather than, but then again, they have split modes, so you have to kind of, again, use that tracker.
Is this Wizards banking on that no one plays standard and paper?
I don't think so. I think they're actually making a push back towards standard paper play.
I think this is going to rejuvenate standard play.
I think the graphic on Arena better look amazing for the venture into the dungeon.
It's probably going to cause a lot of issues, to be honest, because when you venture, you have to pick one of the 3, and if you actually, especially on a mobile client, if you click one that you don't intend to use, it's like, damn it, I didn't want this.
I played Arena on my phone when it first came out and then stopped because I was in a draft once and like the client messed up and it wouldn't let me attack and then like skipped my turn and I lost a draft match because of it.
After that,
I was like, never doing this again.
My coworker today couldn't get one of his lands to tap for mana.
Yeah, it's got a lot of issues.
It's not meant for mobile. I know they're pushing it for mobile just because they're trying to hit other markets, which have a much bigger population than the United States. But man, it's rough.
I think it's just them trying to compete with like Hearthstone and stuff like that. But it's really hard to compete with like a client that started out digital and never went paper. I did want to bring up about Eliwick, the Green Planeswalker from the new set. Do you think this card is playable without other dungeon or venture cards? Just like constantly plussing her and venturing constantly and getting all of these additional abilities.
I mean, it seems like a deck building oversight if you let that happen.
I mean, her to 5 with +1 like does put her out of range of a lot of stuff. Like yeah, if you can get her down early enough, and then like some of the abilities in these dungeons, if you can plus her like 2 or 3 times, like you're getting like, what was the one, like draw 3, then scry 3, and then play a card for free.
Yeah, right. I mean, you have to plus her 7 times for that to work, right? Because that's a 7-layered dungeon, or is it 6-layer? Either way, you have to plus her 7 times, so it's just like really unlikely they're going to be able to do that.
That's fair.
Like, yeah. You could try. It's just, I think you're just, it's a losing premise.
Right. I think in a deck built around the venture, like, obviously she does have the potential to, like, support herself venturing through a dungeon by herself. But I think if you were to pair it with other Venture into the Dungeon cards, you could definitely have something going for you. It's got legs.
Also, for any D&D fans, she's totally a bard.
There's actually cards that are type bard in this set. I don't know if there's any other ones existing in Magic. Yeah, they actually say bard.
Right here.
Oh my god, thank god. I was so mad that the one Arnie Brokenbow or whatever from Kaldheim, I was so mad that card wasn't a bard.
Or Yisan the Watering Bard.
Right, they better retcon a bunch of cards.
I think they will.
Right.
Is there any cards that are outside of the venture mechanic that you guys see that excite you for kind of any eternal formats? Because right now, when I look at the set, I just see it making no impact at all on either Modern, Legacy, and it's going to make impact on Commander just because there's so many Commander-like flavored things in here.
Wish.
What's that card do?
That's the two and a red. You can cast a card from outside the game this turn.
You can play a card.
You can play a card from outside the game this turn. I think that card definitely has potential. See play out in eternal formats all the way back to even vintage even.
Yeah, I would treat that card as like a demonic tutor.
Right.
It's very similar. It's a demonic tutor costs 3 just because you know you can use your sideboard as that.
Yeah, it's like an extra 15 cards.
Yeah.
This is one card I thought might see like playing Modern or Legacy was Oswald Filibrander. It's 1 white tap, sack an artifact, search your library for an artifact card with mana value equal to 1+ that sacrificed artifact's mana value, put it onto the battlefield and shuffle, activate this only as a sorcery. And he is a 1 and a white for a 2/2.
I love the
Birthing Pod on a creature for artifacts. Seems pretty good. Especially with Urza's Saga.
I love the keyword magical tinkering.
Yep.
I like the part of this card that makes it not feel as bad as Birthing Pod is it actually costs a white every single time you undo this. One of the things that
Birthing Pod can't pay life.
Yeah, Birthing Pod was colorless and 2 for X in green, so you always just played 1 and 2 life all the time for it. And just to be able to go up the chain with like from 2, 3, 4, 5 was so easy just because you had to have 4 colorless sources. Whereas this requires you have 4 planes or 4 white sources, which makes it way harder to kind of chain up all the way through.
Birthing Pod legendary?
No.
Yeah, this card's a legendary also, so it's not like you can have multiple out to get like multiple triggers and climb faster. I just think it works really well with Urza's Saga and like its ability to search for like a 1. Because doesn't it put it into play also?
Yeah, it keeps going up. So it goes from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4. So
Urza's Saga's final ability, doesn't that put the 1 drop into play?
Yep, but Urza's Saga specifically says 0 or 1 mana cost, not mana value 1+. So you can get colored artifacts with this, whereas Urza's Saga can't.
Is there any busted like 2 drop artifacts?
You can get Corridor Monitor to untap this. To the 1/4 from like, so there's definitely going to be some form of chains going up. It's just where does it end? Because you can go like turn 2, this, maybe turn 3, Corridor Monitor, sack a 1-drop artifact, Corridor Monitor into maybe, is there like a 3-drop key that can untap it?
Yeah, I think the key is 3 mana.
Manifold key?
I'm trying to see. There was like one other card I definitely thought could see play. Oh, the 1-drop red guy. He has the ability if he's... Here he is. So 1-drop for a 0/1 with menace. Whenever Minion of the Mites attacks, if you attack with creatures with total power 6 or greater this combat, you may put a dragon creature from your hand onto the battlefield tapped and attacking. I don't know how yet, but I feel there's got to be a way to make this card busted.
This is a jank 'em out card. I love it.
Pack Tactics as a mechanic. This seems like a mechanic that follows through multiple creatures in this set. Just reminds me of Battalion. Battalion was very similar, where you had to attack with 2 other creatures, and typically with Battalion, you were probably already at 6 power with those creatures.
Very true.
So I feel like this is going to be that. I don't know what the dragon is you're going to be drawing. What's the best dragon you can put into play right now?
I've been trying to think about it.
Probably the red-white one from Brixhaven.
Velimachus?
Yeah.
But then you miss its attack trigger. Because it puts it into play attacking, so you don't get the actual trigger. So you just get to put a 5/5 vigil. Or it's tapped, so you don't get the trigger on it.
It's still a big dragon, and you get it next.
What about the green-black one and untap your lands?
That one is good, yeah.
That's spicy.
But you got to pay 10 life for that.
Yeah. That one's also only a 4/4. There's still dragons yet to be spoiled.
Yeah, I mean, it's Dungeons and Dragons, right? We already got the dungeons part of it all, and now we're getting the dragons coming, kind of slowly sifting in.
You just play the dragon from Mirrodin that you can pay 2 life to pump it, and then you just pay a bunch of life because you're already attacking for 6 or more. It's a 4/4. You put that in, so you're at 10.
Are you talking about Moldsteel Dragon from New Phyrexia?
Yeah, yeah.
The Phyrexian mana fire breathing.
I'm trying to think how much damage that would be because you're having 6 power already. Then you're going to put in a 4 power guy, so that's 10.
I guess you'd have to pay like 20 life to do 10 more.
Yeah, to get 10 more power to kind of finish him off. That kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Ogryn and Hellkite.
Ogryn and Hellkite's a nice one just because you can zap them for 5 and then it deals 5. The biggest dragon I can think of right now is like Atarka, but that one you can't dome them in the face, but it is an 8/8 trampler.
Atarka's dumb.
That one's the biggest and the fattest of all dragons. I'm sure there's other dragons we can't think of. Does the dragon have to sacrifice itself? No.
Well, you could put Draco in.
Yeah, 4/4. Woo!
No, 16-16.
Does Draco get, I don't think he gets +2/+2.
He's no, talking about the original Draco. I just found mine the other day.
All right. Yeah, there's nothing in the set right now that excites me for anything outside of EDH. EDH seems like insane for this set. Especially, there are some mechanics that actually require you to have a D20. And I would like you, I know we were discussing before the podcast, but is it going to be required that you have a randomized D20 with you now at tournaments when you're going to be using this card? Or are they going to allow phone apps? What's going to be the deal with that?
I saw that the pre-release and whatnot will have actual D20s.
Yeah, like with your pre-release kit, it'll come with a non-spin down.
Dude, those are going to be really highly sought after, I believe.
And the,
oh, yeah, especially if they have the symbol for the 20. Like, yeah, and the fat pack. I was actually asking people this at draft yesterday because I was curious because I had saw Treasure Chest for the first time spoiled. And I was asking if it's going to be a rule that you're not allowed to use the spin down because technically a spin down isn't randomized. So I wonder if Wizards is going to make it an official rule because it wasn't before. I know a lot of the time they would say at tournaments don't use a spin down to decide like who goes first and stuff like that. But like, is it going to become an official rule that you can't do that for these cards?
I think the rule actually for like determining who goes first is as long as both parties agree on it, it's actually random, not like a, like you can't arm wrestle me because I'm always going to win, obviously. But if you were to go like, if you and I both decide to play rock, paper, scissors, that's random. That's allowed. If you and I both agreed to roll a spin down, again, we both it's agreed and we're both using the same. Yeah.
Okay.
It just has to be random. It has to be a game of luck, if you will. Not, I mean, obviously you can't play Uno to decide who goes first just because of the time constraint.
That would be epic.
Uno.
Also, another card I wanted to bring up, I forgot, was Circle of Dreams Druid. Gaia's Cradle on a creature seems pretty good.
Is this better than Elvish Archdruid?
100%.
Well, Elvish Archdruid already gets, I think it's played as like a
well, one of them. Well, it buffs, though.
This is close.
Like, it doesn't, it costs one green mana less, but like, which in the elf deck normally probably won't ever make a difference. But it, is there a circumstance where you, is there a land where you would add a non-colored mana in an elf deck?
I mean, a lot of the elf decks are green-black. But
yeah, but they're just splashing the bayou that's fetchable. Or
yeah.
Like, they have really easy ways to go and get it either through crop rotation, obviously their own fetch lands and other nonsense that they have in their deck.
I don't think this sees play in Legacy Elves, but I do believe this. Like, I think someone's going to try to build like Elves in Modern and actually make it like feasible as a deck.
Well, this you have Elvish Archdruid and Heritage Druid, and that already exists. And this does the same thing essentially as Elvish Archdruid does. This is more, I guess, Circle of the Dream Druid is more for Commander when you're playing a non-elf deck that you can generate an absurd amount of mana with this card.
Just your budget Gaia's Cradle.
Well, you play both. I mean, I know I'm going to put one in my list. Right. This is searchable with Recruiter of the Guard.
That's true.
Or yes. Imperial Recruiter, who's playing, whoever playing the Jund versions of these decks. The triple green is aggressive, but in EDH, is just a joke. All right, do you guys see any of the cards you want to talk about? Because like right now, I'm just kind of like, oh, that's nice. And from a flavor standpoint, I'm like, oh, that's cool. But nothing kind of draws me into the set. There's nothing I see from an internal standpoint yet.
Yeah, everything I like would want to talk about would be for Standard's sake, which I also don't know for sure because like I feel like Standard isn't going to change until Eldraine rotates.
Yeah, I think a lot of the new sets or the last few sets have just been shadowed by Throne of Eldraine, and even with all the bans from Throne of Eldraine, that set is still just towering over it, and the companions still exist. So once Throne goes out and then Ikoria, you should see some real great amount of life brought to Standard, just because you're going to see these sets that were kind of shadowed finally shine, or we might run into the next set being Thrones of Eldraine 2.0.
Yeah, we only got 3 more months before we find it out.
Yeah, right. Hold on. I think the next set's a little frustrating because it's 2 sets in 2 months. It's Innistrad, but it's Innistrad Twilight Edition, where 1 month it's like vampire themed, and then next month's box is werewolf themed.
It's like, yeah, vampire. Wait, really? Yeah. It's a vampire wedding and then a werewolf set. I think it's the other way around, though. I think you get werewolves for it.
Sure. Either way, it's 2 back-to-back Standard sets. And
but
think
imagine they're going to be small sets.
I don't think so. I think there's no mixing between them, because how would you determine who gets 2 packs for draft and 1 pack? I think it's just 2 full 249 card sets.
Oh, my God.
Morning Tide and Innistrad vibes.
Yeah.
Or Morning Tide, Lorwyn.
Well, Lorwyn was the big set, and then Morning Tide was the small set. and then Evening, or whatever, the Shadowmoor was a large set, and then Evening Tide was the small set. These are just two large sets.
It's going to be frustrating with so many cards.
I just think it's Wizards' way of crashing the arena market. You're going to burn all your mythics, your mythic blue wild cards.
Yep. You don't have any wild cards anymore because you spent it all on
Historic.
Yeah.
Because Brainstorms are rare, so you need to use them there.
That was Faithless Looting. Yep. I had that problem. I have Blue Red Phoenix built now on there.
Yeah, but then you're just out of
took forever. Cards.
So the next thing I want to talk about is kind of Magic the Gathering Online. I know we focus primarily based on paper, but due to restrictions of the last couple of, or the last year, we really haven't had the ability to see a large tournament determine what the metagame is going to look like. So we consistently look at like MTGO list or any potential tournaments that are happening. One of the things with Modern Horizons that came out, or Modern Horizons 2 that came out, is just how devastating it was to that economy. So for example, the card Raghavan in real life started off at 50 or 45 and moved up to 80, and they're still kind of like staggering at that price, but they will come down because people are just cracking packs like crazy. Like, you guys are doing drafts. I know a lot of people are still opening up collector boosters, set boosters, and even draft boosters. Magic Online, this is like the first time that we've seen something get so outrageously high. So I complained when Euros were like 45 tickets, 50 tickets. Right now, Raghavans are sitting at like 120, and they just keep going up.
Ooh, yeah. 106.
That's the price of today.
Yeah. Another thing, too, is, like, loan programs are getting, like, overwhelmed by it.
They can't keep them in stock.
It's at the point where they're not accepting new applications for loan programs.
Yep.
They had to stop receiving them because they just can't. Like, it's to the point where people can't even get fetches. It's getting, like, it's crazy how many people are playing Modo again.
Well, we have this huge surge of modern interest, and we have no outlet to go into, like, a competitive realm, because Wizards hasn't decided what they're going to do with the competitive aspect of Magic the Gathering, especially for paper play, and we have no insight of whether it's going to happen. And with 2022, we're already through 2021, so we would expect an announcement in fall, but we have no inkling or any whiff of any of that stuff coming out, so we don't even know what we're going to do. Right now, we're just at the mercy of all of the circuits that are in your local area. For us being in the Midwest, we have Nerd Rage Gaming, which they did make an announcement that they are going to do something, but that's not going to be till September, and which not too far away. We just don't have any idea, and I bet you that first tournament, I would guarantee all the slots are sold out within 20 days.
Seconds. I think it'll be second, or minutes maybe.
Maybe. The
amount of anticipation of people, like, even look at FNMs now, like, the last one we had, like, what was there? There was, like, 40 or 50 people there between all three formats. I think people are really looking forward to paper play again. And I think that's why there's the increase in Modo, is because, like you were saying, like, we have no outlet. Like you were saying, we love paper, but you don't have enough tournaments happening to play, so you play online. I was just going to say, do you think the meta is, like, different?
I was going to say, for what it's worth, that I think Wizards has made it pretty clear that they don't plan on supporting any kind of competitive play anymore like that. Pretty much axing Worlds, taking away all the prize money, or $750,000, like 75% of the prize pool, telling all the MPL even that they're not going to have a future. I don't expect Wizards to pretty much do anything about it. I think it's pretty much going to fall on the local private businesses supporting competitive
matches. Like the circuits, like Star City. No, Nerd Rage is probably going to continue. I'm not sure of other circuits outside of those two, just because.
I know Fireball.
Are they still running?
Well, they had the GPs. They had the GPs. They had that contract, but that's not getting renewed, so I'm sure they'll have their own circuit. TCG Player also had a circuit, too.
Yeah, those are going to be hard to start up. I know the TCG circuit around here was kind of not great. The fact that you could just buy your entry through just physically buying those points was what a lot of people did. So you just didn't actually attend those tournaments because you didn't have to. Whereas a Star City, the only way that you qualify for their 50,000 or however large the ending prize tournament is at the end of the year is actually playing in their events. Same with the Nerd Rage series, which incentivizes people or allows people who are consistently playing. Whereas the TCG Player, I've competed in that thing like 7 times, and only one of the times I physically qualified just strictly off playing in the tournaments. The other 6 times, I just bought points. I was like, I'll just buy them and go to their big tournament.
See, and I was always the guy that was selling my points.
So
the first time I got them, I didn't even know what they were for. Like, I was at a side event at a GP, and I won them because I top aided like this 64 man, and they gave me like 15 points, and I was like, I don't know what these cards are for. And they like pointed to a poster, and I was like, I'm not going to be able to go to that. And some guy was like, I'll trade you packs for them, and I was like, deal.
Get these out of here. I don't want these in my life. They right. also could buy you buys. So it was, I remember going to the one of the big ones, which I forgot what I think the grand prize was 50,000, you know, dispersed amongst the top 64. In the first two rounds of the tournament, there's like 700 players in the tournament. Only like 80 players played the first two rounds. It was hilarious.
Damn, that's a lot of buys.
Well, everybody just bought them. He was like, I don't need to, I start 2-0. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and buy my, like my, I don't want to play amongst the first two rounds.
So does it mean now with no DCI number and like planeswalker points and stuff, you can't get buys anymore?
Correct. There's no system in place. So right now, if there's a GP, there's nothing to give you buys. There's nothing to, that GP accumulates to. Nothing.
It's just a big tournament with money you can win.
I mean, that's what they should be. I don't Agreed. Care for the Pro Tour. The idea, I mean, don't get me wrong, I strived and tried really hard to go for the Pro Tour multiple years. It is really difficult to make just because the old system of the PTQs was like you had to spike a PTQ. So you'd play in this 9-round tournament, then get to top 8. And when you're in top 8, if you just lost, all of your effort was gone.
Yep. Didn't accumulate to anything.
No.
You got like, what, like 2 pro points for like hitting like top 8?
At a GP, but at a PTQ, you got zero. You got nothing.
Yeah, it was first place, winner take all.
That was. And you had people... I remember the discussions because I would always... I got to the top 8, lost to the mirror match multiple times, and just wanted... I got so frustrated, but I remember the top table. There would be two guys. I'll give you $700 because I want to go to the Pro Tour. The guy's like, no, I'll give you $800, and I go to the Pro Tour instead of playing this... They were trying to buy one another.
Isn't that like...
No, when it's just you two at the last table, your decisions in that match have no impact on other matches. You're free to do what you want.
That's fair.
That's just what it is, and the judges made that really clear, and that's why you had these like individuals just like, well, I have no intention. I'm going to the Pro Tour. What will you pay me to not let or to not play this match? And that's what would happen.
At that point, you're just buying your like Pro Tour like placement.
Well, you did win 11 rounds of Magic, so you that's kind true. Of earned it. I mean,
it's not like you're bad. Yeah, you can't look sucker your way into 11 wins.
Oh, don't get me wrong. When Primeval Titan was in Standard, I saw people win Dungrown Elder that would attack with their Primeval Titan over and over and just miss their triggers and still win.
Also true.
With these MTGO prices being at the price that they're at, I don't think we're actually seeing like an accurate representation of what Modern Horizons 2 is doing to the format. Hogak was pretty cheap, and we saw how devastating that card was to Modern immediately. Roggevons, a lot of people just don't want to, you know, pony up $480 to get them, or your renting service doesn't allow you to get them.
Even if you do have a renting service and you do manage to get your hands on Roggevan, $480 of what your max rental is $1,000, so like half your budget is just your Agavans.
I think the biggest thing that's frustrating to me, and I believe most of the competitive Magic, when you buy a pack of, you know, the newest standard set, there's a redemption program, so it makes sense that the pack is $399, because theoretically if I get 1x or 4x of the set, I can bring that set, take it from my Magic Online account and bring it to Paper Magic. So that makes sense. You cannot do that with Modern Horizons, yet the packs are still $699.
Yeah, that blows my mind as well.
Like, this is... You can't redeem... If you could redeem them, I'm all for it being $6.99, but the fact that the drafts are more expensive, people are just not shelling out this kind of money for lottery tickets, I guess, on Magic Online. Especially when you're going to need these things in paper, because Wizards has shown no support outside of Arena. So if you want to play Magic at a competitive level... At some point, you're going to have to obtain these cards, so it's difficult for an individual to decide, hey, I'm going to buy $480 in Roggevons and then also a set in real life for $320. That's so absurd.
$1,000 on, what, a total of 4 actual Magic cards?
Yeah, it's gross. And right. I honestly think this is Wizards' attempt at stabbing down or removing the rental services, since the rental services prevent people from buying drafts or purchasing products. So they've probably seen a real hit, because in the last 3 years, let me take that back. In the last year, the influx of the amount of people that use rental services is out of control. Right. Whereas, you know,
it's cheaper.
Yeah, and then years ago, where you just didn't hear people using them all the time. Now it's just all, everybody I talk to is like, yeah, I sold my Magic Online collection, and I just rent. Well, now you just don't get that option. Well, you can rent, you just can't get the cards you want anymore.
Right.
Do you think it's worth drafting Modern Horizons 2 on MTGO because of the price of these mythics?
It's mainly Roggevon and Urza Saga. So specifically the two, you know, major hitters of the format.
To be fair, Urza Saga is a rare.
Yeah, but it's still, you can't rent it. All the places that have it for rental, because the fair use policy, I think a lot of people just hoarded them to hold them on for the challenge. And then once the challenge was over, they gave them back.
That's some pretty shady stuff.
That's called spiking.
Yes. You guys, anything else you guys want to talk about from a Magic Online standpoint?
Not that I can think of. I haven't really played Moto too much lately. I haven't really had the time, but I can't obviously start a new rental program because they're not accepting anyone. So
it would be foolish of me to like make it. I have no knowledge of what happens with Magic Online. I still have a rental account. I just haven't used it in a while.
Yeah, they're pretty useful. Like I said, with the influx of like what I want to do from a Magic standpoint, I want to test a Modern deck. I can't get enough reps in paper play, so I need to get some reps in from a physical
standpoint. We have no other place to do it either. Right.
And then once that paper play does exist, again, I'll be doing more of those. Like, for example, today is Wednesday, and we have the ability to go play at a Modern event, and then on Friday we get to, if you combine those two, you get about 8 reps in. And of those reps, how valuable are those?
The amount of local decks.
Yeah, and the people that didn't upgrade their decks or didn't even know what Roggevon did when I was casting it was pretty preposterous. So the wins I'm getting are at an FNM level, where when I'm playing on Magic Online, I actually get to play against a real meta, if you will.
Yeah, you're getting an actual practice. Like, yeah. It was quite surprising to see how many people like were freaking out when I was playing Control on Sunday, and I'd flash in Snapcaster to like block a Roggevon, and they'd be like, why would you do that? There's no value. And I was like, do you understand what this card does? Like, right. If I can't kill this card now, it is just going to cast my spells against me, which I do not want, which did happen playing against JB. He casted my Narset, which is something I definitely don't want to hit the table.
And JB's on the, is it Delver list that's in Modern? And I think he's 8-1 with that deck. He's just smoking fools.
I'll just leave that deck up.
That's a good deck.
I just got my last, or no, I have 3 of the Strixhaven card. I need one more.
The Strixhaven card.
Yeah, the Expressive Iteration, that's the card.
Oh, okay. Do you have 4 Roggevons?
I have 3.
Okay, yeah, I can borrow you the one.
No, I'm going to play Brazen Borrower, so.
All right, guys. I have a question of the week this week. If you could choose any format to play at a casino, what format would you be, and then how many times would you bet on yourself to beat the casino?
Pauper.
Pauper's pretty good.
Hack War.
Hack War. That's got to be the best one.
Back where I don't want to even suggest what we do, but
well, Pack War. The reason I picked Pack War is I think Pack War gives you the best chance, because like in a constructed format, like you can just lose out of nowhere because of, like, drawing bad stuff like that. Just with Pack War, it's just like you have to have the highest number.
About like Omniscience 3-card draw or whatever?
3-card Monty.
Yeah, 3-card Monty.
I would play that against the casino. There's only like 4 decks or 3 cards like I would use against them that I could think of, but again, it's that's like more of like
the Annex.
Yep, done that. I've done the show and tell Black Lotus show and tell Emrakul work sometimes, but that loses to the Chancellor and the Annex play.
Right.
There's a other bunch I want to. You can do like a zoo route, because sometimes you can just go like land Wild Nacatl, and then that beats the Chancellor of the Annex.
Yep.
Which is pretty fascinating. Well, yeah, I think there's, I'm trying to remember, anyways, there's a bunch of that. I used to play that a lot when I used to do a lot of tournaments with my random tournament friends.
What format would you pick, Tony?
I like the idea of Pack War because of how fast it is. If I had to, I would like to play draft, but it'd be like poker style. So there's 8 individuals at a table, and there's a lot of money on the pot, and winner take all.
Oh, hell yeah.
So you'd play against other people. It's similar to what you do to draft now, instead of competing for $30 of store credit or whatever it accumulates to, you'd compete for $500.
What about instead of Pack War, it was Flip It or Rip It?
Have you guys ever played that? Ever?
I have not. Yeah. I don't actually know what Flip It or Rip It is.
Go ahead and explain it.
You flip one card, and then you rip the next card, and you keep going until the rare is flipped.
Yeah, you open up a pack of Magic, you shuffle it up face down, and then you flip one card at a time, and every card, keep the flipped card, you rip the next card, and you just go through the entire pack, and a lot of people...
Terrible.
It's not great. I've seen people rip some really expensive cards. Nothing too crazy, nothing like Black Lotus level, but I've definitely seen people rip Tarmogoyfs from Modern Masters when Tarmogoyfs were like 150.
I saw that. Noble Hierarch foil, Noble Hierarch get ripped in one pack.
It's so brutal.
Oh my god, yeah, no. I already feel bad playing pack or losing pack wars when I have expensive ass cards in there.
Yeah, I think nothing of it. I just think about all the times I can win, but I am the most unluckiest player, so I never win pack wars.
No, that's wrong, because I am way more unlucky.
Let's pack one tomorrow or Friday, and we'll see who's the
unluckiest. What if it ends in a draw? Right,
we're going to have to just keep buying packs. It's like war rules. You have to just keep going.
Oh, my God. Stuck at the store two boxes deep.
Right. No, I'm unlucky. You're not. I am.
I mean, I'm not going to deny it. I'm pretty lucky when it comes to Magic, so...
You are unnaturally lucky. It's insane. I want to have your luck for just, like, 1 hour.
It only gets you through one round. That doesn't do anything. That's such a bad trade.
See, but my luck doesn't really pertain to actually playing. It's only, like, opening packs. When it comes to, like, playing, my luck really isn't there.
All right, dude.
Packs, though. I'll crack packs for you all day.
Check us out on Facebook. Give us a like and a listen. We're also on Twitter. If you'd like to send questions to us, you can send it to thepaperplayerpodcast@gmail.com. We're more than happy to answer questions. And that is it. Anybody else got to sign off?
Wednesday, my dudes.
Bucks and six.
I hope.